Like to call the Legacy Finance Committee meeting to order. Welcome everyone. I'd like to, Ms. Hirsch, would you be willing to call our roll, please?
Good morning, everyone. Okay, Chair Lilly?
Lilly present.
Lilly present. Vice Chair Jordan?
Present.
Jordan present. Representative Green?
Present.
Green present. Representative Acomb?
Present.
Acomb present. Representative Anderson?
Anderson present.
Anderson present. Representative Bo?
Bo present.
Bo present. Representative Christensen?
Present.
Christensen present. Representative Hassan? Representative Murphy?
Murphy present.
Murphy present. Representative Nelson? Nelson present. Representative Erdahl?
Present.
Erdahl present. Representative Waslowick?
Present.
Waslowick present. And Representative Zhang?
Representative Zhang has asked for an absence, so may be able to check in later, but not. Thank you, Ms. Hirsch. We have a quorum?
Yes.
Thank you. With that, Vice Chair Jordan, have you had an opportunity to look at our minutes? And if so, would you be willing to move them, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Any questions in regards to the minutes? Seeing no hands or jumping up and down, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, the minutes have been approved. Thank you. Well, good morning, everyone. We're going to start off with House File 639, and that's the Clean Water Fund, a portion of the legacy bill. One-third of our money goes to this area, and it's really an important piece of the work that we're able to do as a state with these monies. First, I'd like to move that House File 639 be moved to be laid over. But so we have that motion before us. Representative Hansen, welcome to this committee. Thank you for your work on you know, with regards to the Clean Water Bill. We also have Representative Acomb, who was a member of the Clean Water Council, and we have many guests today. But this is exciting, again, the work. I continue to go back to, I think, the legacy first passing years ago now. We're about at the halfway point, but I always think of the girl on the dock in those TV ads. And I think that really help push the effort over the line, but to get it passed by the voters of Minnesota, and how exciting it is and the work that we're able to do. Representative Hansen, we have your bill before us, and welcome, and please begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm pleased to be here again presenting the outcome of our committee work in the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Committee. And you have some cross-pollination on your committee from members who worked, had to get pollination in there somehow, but you have some members who are on both committees, and I think could also speak to the group effort on working on this. As you mentioned, Mr. Chair, it is now, I think, the 13th year since passage of the amendment, and as you were going through the roll, I think you and I and Representative Murphy and Representative Erdahl are probably the only ones left on the in this Zoom who members who were here and voted on the amendment, sending it to the ballot. And also, I think part of what we're doing here with 639 is following the guidance with former chair of this committee, Murphy, on the guidebook to try to set a guide path for working for the people who passed this. So the people, not any commission or committee or group, but the people who voted for this and the people who expect outcomes from this. So this bill is primarily the recommendations from the Clean Water Council, and they can speak to that. But as you know, we had additional dollars come in with the forecast. And so our committee appropriated those dollars in the bill before you and also provided some direction on to the council to look at some tasks before. And then probably the largest thing that people are going to comment about is trying to solve the issue of soil and water conservation district funding, where for the last three biennium, funds have been taken from this fund for operations for soil and water conservation districts. So I'm going to walk through some of the new items, if that's okay, Mr. Chair, and I'll go through the changes or the additions, not the changes. So I'll start with the first change, though, and that was eliminating the conservation drainage appropriation. I would challenge the council to look at any outcomes about how much conservation drainage has actually been implemented without the demonstration project. I think the demonstration projects have been the only thing, and I think after 10 years, we should look at a higher, better use for those funds. We provide $628,000 in addition to the Forever Green appropriation. We add $2.353 million in FY22 and 23 for testing groundwater and surface water for microplastics and nanoplastics. And Mr. Chair, you remember 2 years ago, we had extensive discussions on this. This is the same proposal. During that 2 years, we've seen microplastic testing all over the world. We have found that microplastics are showing up in human placentas. We are finding it in water everywhere. So I think Minnesota needs to catch up and do that sampling. Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl and former Chair Murphy may remember that the early years we spent money on LIDAR. I think we spent about $22 million on LIDAR mapping. And I was recently asked if we needed to spend some more money on LIDAR. And after that significant investment 10 years ago, I think it's appropriate for the council to look at that, whether or not that would be inappropriate if we need to upgrade that data. In addition, the Minnesota Supreme Court recently ruled about groundwater equaling drinking water in a case with U.S. Steel. So we asked the council to look at the implications for that, that groundwater is drinking water, and how that, what that means for both funding and regulation. And then in Washington State, there was a study done. So we want to look at how much there's a product in tires that comes off as tires are used, and it's impacting salmon in a Washington state. So we need to look at what the impacts are here, trout and other fish. What are the impacts with water? Something we didn't think of, just this compound that is in tires that keeps them sound, gets shed over time and is ending up in water. So I think that's an important thing to look at. We have $350,000 to develop and designate a groundwater management area in Dakota County. Members may remember a year ago the whole discussion about water trains and how do we protect groundwater so it's not exported. And so having a groundwater management area in Dakota County is an appropriate issue on protecting groundwater as part of the Constitution. We provide an additional $792,000 for CREP. Again, the federal government hitting that match would help with water quality. $1.5 million for health risk limits for PFAS and two neonicotinoids. So we're finding these things in water. Let's look at the health, getting a health risk limit for them. $2.5 million for inflow infiltration for the private systems. There is precedent for that. It has been funded before. $2.5 million for lead service line replacement in environmental justice communities. And Representative Jordan could discuss that provision. That's from a bill that she had. What do we do for soil and water conservation districts? So In 2015, money was taken, over $20 million from this fund to fund operations for soil and water conservation districts. That money was repaid with a surplus. In 2017, over $20 million was taken from the fund to fund operations of soil and water conservation districts. And that was repaid when there was a surplus into the Clean Water Fund. In 2019, over $20 million was taken and it was not repaid. And what is happening is essentially the Clean Water Fund is becoming local government aid for soil and water conservation districts. I don't believe that's an appropriate constitutional use for basic operations. And so we provide an off-ramp where we have $12 million in FY22, the first year, for soil and water conservation districts. And then in the subsequent years, we provide that money for technical assistance and implementation to soil and water districts, for soil health practices, for groundwater protection, for practices to reduce erosion, to protect water quality, and for sustainable forestry practices. Make sure it's statewide. So there's money that would go up into the forest areas, money to go where into the west where the wind erosion and where we have black snow occurring because of the loss of cover. And then southeastern part of the state for groundwater protection in the karst and in the shallow sands around the state. So that the Clean Water Fund would be being used for water quality purposes with outcomes rather than for general operations. We also have a fee in here, a $25 voluntary fee, or if a county has watershed districts, which about 40% of the land in the state is covered by a watershed district, then there's a local match. So a $25 fee on the mortgage and deed registry is based on trying to tie soil and water conservation to the land. So by owning land, you pay a $25 fee that helps pay for the services to protect soil and water. And then you can apply for clean water money, but there has to be some local buy-in. Those that have watershed districts are already levied for it. But we continue to have several counties who rely solely on this. And what has happened over the last three biennium is you've had an equal amount, regardless of land size or population, $100,000 going to each soil and water district. That's not an outcome-based, that's a distribution-based local government aid formula. And that is what we're doing with the soil and water conservation districts. There have been numerous task forces, work groups, stakeholder groups trying to find a solution. 2 years ago, we proposed an increase in the soil or the solid waste fee to help doing this. My knowledge, no other proposal, every proposal that is put forward always has a problem. We've spent 6 years on this, and there's never a solution. And it's time that we actually solve this problem for the soil and water districts or any other local unit of government to rely on this money. There's no guarantee it will be here 12 years from now. The amendment ends. And so relying more and more and more on these dollars for basic operations is a mistake, as well as being unconstitutional if it's being used only for operations rather than for an outcome. So I'd encourage those that oppose this to actually think about what I just said. This is not a perpetuity funding system. And like you said, Mr. Chair, people viewed the kid jumping off the dock, not paying for basic operations. This was supposed to be something special. And providing it for soil health, for protecting groundwater, surface water, that is something special, and that is within the outcome that people voted for. So I would ask for your support. I know there are some testifiers as well as written testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Good overview, as always. With us, we have Mr. Jewell. He's the chair of the Clean Water Council. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
You didn't have to drive down today, I'm guessing.
I did not, which actually I appreciate. So as much as it isn't a great thing to be on Zoom, and that would be nice to see you in person, this is a good. So thank you, Chair Lilly, for inviting us, and Representative Hansen for your work on this as well. I'm Frank Jewell. I am the chair of the Clean Water Council. I'm just going to do a very quick introduction, and then Paul will take it away for a very short overview. A number of your members have already heard from us, as Representative Hansen mentioned. So the Clean Water Council is made up of 17 members appointed by the governor, and then additional members of the legislature who are non-voting, two from the Senate and two from the House, and their involvement, and Ms. Akam, Representative Akam, is one of those prior members. We spend about a year looking at the requests and considerations for clean water funding, and we made our presentation in the form of a report to the legislature, which came to you in December of last year. Our recommendations at this point, as Representative Hansen has pointed out, relate largely to those funds that we could allocate in December of last year, which is $220 million. There's a lot of input from stakeholders, from the public and others as we come to these. We do have some thoughts about supplemental funding, and Representative Hansen has kind of pointed out the conundrum about SWCDs, which we have regularly not put in our budget for funding for the reasons he pointed out. But at the same time, we know that a large portion of the legislature, or at least members of the legislature, feel very strongly about assuring that SWCDs can do the work that gets done on the landscape. With that, I'm going to pass it on to Paul Gardner, who will do the presentation for the board. And I may jump away before you are done, because I have to go to another meeting. So thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Jewell, and thank you for your work with the council and your serving Minnesota in that way. It's great. Thank you, sir. Mr. Gardner, welcome. Welcome to our committee. You've been great as far as any phone calls we've reached to you. You're open to that. Mr. Gardner, please introduce yourself and go ahead. If you're ready, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Paul Gardner. I'm the administrator for the Clean Water Council. Since six of the committee's members are also on Representative Hansen's committee, and they're the legacy committee's members most interested in water, we thought a lengthy presentation would be both redundant and kind of annoying. So in addition, the bill, as you see, as amended, has 99% of the Clean Water Council's and governor's recommendations in it already. So the Clean Water Council would like to present a very short presentation to hit some highlights, and then agency staff are available to answer any questions. Mr. Chair and members, the Clean Water Council produced its initial recommendations for the Clean Water Fund on December 1, after an almost year-long public and transparent process guided by the Council's strategic plan. At the base of that strategic plan was that 2009 booklet. It has lasted a long time. The budget target was $220 million. However, the new forecast shows that the Clean Water Fund has an additional $36 million in it. The governor's pending supplemental budget request that we believe is imminent will likely include some proposed restoration of cuts made by the council due to the lower original budget target. At the request of the council, those requests should be for programs already reviewed and vetted by the council rather than requests for programs that the council hasn't seen. Obviously, the bill before you, as amended, includes some new programs in which the council cannot express in a position, but several of them have received a hearing by the council. The council is also not averse to hearing new ideas. That's how we started talking about microplastics in the council a year and a half ago. And just yesterday, we scheduled some speakers to speak about the Maui decision, which is related to that U.S. Steel case in northeastern Minnesota related to groundwater. There we go. I've already screwed up my other one of my slides. Here we go. All right. Rather than give you a line-by-line summary of each program, I'll just mention that the council's strategic plan was a guidepost for all proposals. There are about 40 strategies in the plan, and you can see a few easily recognizable outputs and outcomes listed here for both Greater Minnesota and the Twin Cities Metro. The plan lays out realistic expectations for the public for what can get accomplished by 2034. The handouts for today include the strategic plan and a copy of the council's recommendations, which are free to peruse at your leisure. We have two summary pie charts here. The first shows how the council and governor's recommendations are broken down by agency. You can see that the Board of Water and Soil Resources is the largest recipient, and much of that funding goes out the door in grants, technical assistance, and easements. You'll note that these numbers are for the original $220 million in recommendations and not the amended bill that you have before you. The second chart shows a breakdown by function using what we call the water management framework. The blue, brown, and purple wedges, if you think of it as a clock going from 12 noon to about 8 o'clock, that includes funding for projects, almost all of which rely on solid foundational science collected in monitoring programs, which is at about from 9 to 10 o'clock in the green, and is usually targeted spending guided by sound planning. And the planning is in, we'll call it umber there, between 11 and 11:30. Finally, just a few key points that are not apparent from the bill language and that respond to legislative questions we've received during the last 2 years. The majority of Clean Water Fund spending goes direct to non-state entities like soil and water conservation districts, watershed districts, cities, counties, landowners, and the like. The state has documented that for each dollar in Clean Water Fund spending, it leverages just under one additional dollar in private, local, state, and federal dollars. It isn't obvious from the list of programs listed here, but 20% of all Clean Water Fund spending contributes to protecting drinking water sources, well in excess of the 5% requirement in the state constitution. In addition, more than half of state employees who are supported by the Clean Water Fund work outside St. Paul, meaning they're more likely to directly support local governments and landowners. Finally, in response to Representative Murphy's interest that we heard at the beginning of the session, the council would like you to know that staff from the council, the LCCMR, Lassard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, and the Subcommittee for Minnesota Water Policy meet quarterly now to compare notes and find areas of past and future collaboration among several dedicated funds. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Agency staff and I would be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Gardner. And again, if members have questions now or after this meeting, I know Mr. Gardner is readily available and his team. So we're going to, well, I guess we have a question. I'm going to go to the question and Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Gardner, I'm just wondering, do you have current figures as to what the percent of impaired waters that we still have today in Minnesota is?
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, the number of impairments in Minnesota is in the thousands. When I first took the job in 2 years ago, I was looking for handy-dandy indicators that the public would be able to use to look at how we're doing in water quality in Minnesota. And I found out that impairments isn't always the best way to do that for one particular reason. It only takes one test of a water to get it on the impaired waters list. but it takes two tests to get it off the impaired waters list. You need two data sets within 10 years. And so we have to be more sure to be able to lift the impairment. We have been talking about ways in which we can measure growth, as it were. If you think of educational testing and evaluation, you think of it as a static versus a growth model. There are certainly waters that are improving, but it does take a few years to actually see trends. We are talking to the PCA about their new more user-friendly monitoring web page at the PCA site, where you'd be able to break down the impairments by type and just how close we are to removing it. But the impairments is the first step, and then coming up with a plan for how to get rid of the impairment is the second step. And I actually, hold on, hot off the presses, have some information that 60% of our lakes and streams are meeting standards. So on average, 40% are impaired. The draft 2020 impaired waters list includes a number of additional delistings. So maybe I'll just leave it there, Representative Erdahl. You can have agency staff break that down a little bit more if you need to.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you. The last information that you received is helpful.
Yep. We have quite a few public testimony, but I'm going to go to two additional member questions here, and then we'll get to those. Representative Acom and then Representative Green. Morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a quick question for the bill author, Chair Hansen. One of the things you'd done a really thorough job of explaining some of the changes that had been made, and I just wanted to ask about one quickly that I think may have been missed, and that's on from chronic wasting disease and the impact on waters, and just wanted to give you an opportunity to maybe say a word or two about that.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Acom. Thank you. I did forget the chronic wasting disease prion study in water, and I believe Mr. Gardner could correct me if I'm wrong, but that was presented to the council about the science there, and I think it's really critical. If prions, which have an indeterminate lifespan, can move through water and contaminate soil and therefore contaminate plant life and then be taken up by deer, that is a huge problem. And so I think we have a very crack team at the University of Minnesota who's been been doing good work on prion research. But we need to look at all aspects of it. Water transport, I think, fits the constitutional requirement. It has been vetted, and I would be hopeful that that should be included. It is in the bill in front of you. I forgot to mention it. Thank you, Representative. Yep.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Representative Acom? Okay. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought we were moving kind of fast, so I didn't want to get out without questions, but if you got testifiers, I will surely wait till after the testifiers to ask those questions.
Either way, Representative Green, we do have about seven testifiers. I thought you might want to hear from them, and then we can kind of – and then we have amendments.
That sounds good.
Thank you, Representative Green. So we're going to transition then into some of the public testimony. And with us this morning, we have Ms. Bogie. Thank you very much. Go ahead and introduce yourself. And that's an amazing room you're in there.
thank you.
Go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Amber Bouget, and I serve as the Chief Deputy Recorder for Hennepin County. I'm also the co-chair of the Minnesota County Recorders Association's Legislative Committee. While the Minnesota County Recorders Association agrees that clean water is an important cause, an added surcharge to the recording fee is not the appropriate funding source for such an initiative. The current uniform fees for recording were established in 2005 and were supported by wide-ranging coalition of interests, including the Minnesota County Recorders Association, the Minnesota Land Title Association, the Real Property Section of the Minnesota State Bar Association, and the Minnesota Realtors. This legislation is now used as a model for similar legislation throughout the country. These predictable fees are designed to ensure that each county recording office charges uniform fees that allow our industry partners to transact business with our offices and support real estate commerce in our state. The current recording fee is standard across the state. Title companies and others who may rely on recording services know that there's one uniform recording fee for all counties. This brings simplification and uniformity to the real estate industry, especially those that operate in multiple or even all counties. Predictable recording fees are desired as an industry standard for many, many reasons, with the ability to comply with consumer protection laws high on the list. Minnesota recorders prefer transparency in the fee charged for the recording service. A legitimate concern is that once one surcharge is added to the recording fee, the fee will become a vehicle for other surcharges to fund other very worthy programs and or causes. We're not just concerned about how adding surcharges to the recording fee affects recorders, but also how such surcharges affect our customers. The current legislation is very concerning because it is permissive and not all counties would be charging the surcharge. It would also apply to all transactions that are subject to mortgage registration and or state deed tax, regardless of amount. This would impact residential transactions in the same manner as commercial ones. If this provision becomes law, Minnesota will go from having one uniform transparent recording fee to having a different fee for certain counties depending on which counties adopt the surcharge. Some of the advantages to current predictable fees are when submitters can effectively predict recording fees, there's less errors. For recorders, predictable fees result in fewer rejections for shortages and overages, which results in cost savings in employee time, postage, and office supplies. The primary benefits for consumers are avoiding delays in closing, confusing fee changes, or the need for disclosures to be re-executed, which all leads to a more transparent experience for the consumer. I'd also like to mention that currently $10.50 of the $46 goes to the state general fund. This is a potential solution for funding. The Minnesota County Recorders Association doesn't oppose the attempt to fund clean water, just using the recording fee as a mechanism. Thank you so much for hearing my testimony today.
Thank you, Ms. Bouger. I kind of made a mistake when we're going to have to kind of tamper that down just a little bit. So if everybody can kind of limit themselves to a couple minutes, otherwise we'll be here till this afternoon, I think. But it was great testimony. Ms. Bernhardt, you're on deck, or you're up, rather, and please introduce yourself and go ahead when you're ready, please.
Thank you, Chair Lilly and members of the committee. My name is Hannah Bernhardt, and I'm a member of the Land Stewardship Project Soil Health and Climate Organizing Committee. I own and operate Medicine Creek Farm in Pine County, where I raise grass-fed beef and lamb and pastured pork. And I'm also a member of the Minnesota Farmers Union, the Young Farmers Coalition, and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture's new Emerging Farmers Working Group. I'm here to testify in support of House File 639, which appropriates over $18 million to implement soil-healthy farming practices. The central practice of my farm is the use of management-intensive rotational grazing, which involves using temporary fencing to move my livestock to fresh grass each day in order to optimize soil health. Since 2016, we've been farming alongside a thriving natural ecosystem in northeastern Minnesota, including wolves and coyotes, thanks to livestock guardian dogs, and our pastures are full of pollinators and ground nesting birds. Last year, we became Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certified and received endorsements for soil health and climate smart practices. I strongly believe that farming that provides a public benefit deserves public investment. And according to a poll conducted by Robber Research in 2019, so do the majority of Minnesotans. 90% of respondents in Minnesota said they support government programs that help farmers try soil health practices because it will keep water clean, save taxpayers money on disaster relief, and ensure a reliable, healthy food supply. My customers say they buy from us because of our care for the environment and watershed. And nearly once a week now, I'm contacted by new customers who are specifically searching for a farm that uses regenerative soil health practices. What's more, I really believe farmers of all ages and political stripes around the state are interested in soil health to reduce costs and increase resiliency and profitability. With the compounding challenges of financial stress and damage to land and infrastructure from extreme weather, the funding in this bill will ensure that more farmers have the needed resources to improve their soil. In closing, quickly, the Land Stewardship Project is working closely with the Board of Water and Soil Resources to ensure that the implementation of these dollars will be equitable and effective. In line with the work of MDA's Emerging Farmers Working Group, we encourage adding language to prioritize those with less access to capital, such as Black, Brown, Indigenous, women, veteran, and disabled farmers, and those on small, mid-sized, and rented farms. We also encourage adding language to ensure that the support farmers receive is calculated based on the cost of implementing the practice, the ecosystem and community benefits the practice provides, and additional incentive. I truly believe this investment will serve us well into the future, and thank you again for the time.
Thank you, Ms. Bernhardt. Thank you for your work. Mr. Nielsen, please introduce yourself and go ahead when you're ready, sir.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. My name is John Nielsen. I'm a real estate attorney for Old Republic National Title Insurance Company. I'm also one of the co-chairs of the Legislative Committee of the Minnesota Land Title Association, which is the state-level trade association for title companies in Minnesota. Title companies conduct closings for the sale and mortgaging of property throughout the state, commercial, residential, real estate. I'll mainly just mirror the comments made by Ms. Bouget and not take up much more of the committee's time. Again, the MLTA supports the purpose of the bill, the work of soil and water conservation districts, but opposes the recording surcharge for largely the same reasons that are set out by Ms. Bouget and in her written statement: the consistency of the fees, the ease, affordability, compliance, all those issues that benefit consumers as well as the real estate industry, and all the hard work that was put into establishing a consistent recording fee that has been a model nationally. So for that reason, we only oppose the surcharge portion of the bill, and I'll end with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nielsen. Thank you for your comments. Mr. Iger, good morning. I imagine you're pretty busy with the real estate world on fire, super mortgage rates at the bottom, but welcome to our committee. I've known you for years, having served on Commerce, and welcome to the Legacy Committee, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. It's good to see you and good to be in Legacy Committee. This might be my first time here, actually.
Right.
So thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. My name is Paul Egger. I'm Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association, and we're a trade association with a membership of over 21,000 real estate professionals in every corner of the state. And I just want to again thank you for the opportunity to testify today regarding our opposition to Sections 12 and 13 of House File 639, which is the new $25 surcharges on both the mortgage registry and deed taxes. Minnesota Realtors, Mr. Chair, does not believe the real estate transaction should be responsible for funding the important programs and activities that benefit all Minnesotans. By adding these surcharges to the existing and regressive mortgage registry and deed taxes, this proposal will add to the cost of housing. These fees also make an already random and confusing tax and fee structure more so. And I just echo the comments of Ms. Bouget and Mr. Nielsen who testified before I. I'd also like to provide just a little bit of background on mortgage registry and deed taxes and the other fees associated with those taxes, just for the committee's benefit here. In fiscal year 2019, buyers and sellers paid over $256 million in mortgage registry and deed taxes combined. For each of those taxes, 97% goes to the general fund and 3% is retained by the counties. In addition, there's a county conservation fee of $5, which is added to the mortgage registry and deed taxes in the 10 counties that participate in the Minnesota Agricultural Land Preservation Program. And finally, we get to the recording fees. So I'll just give you an example of a typical seller who is also buying their next home. That individual would pay the deed tax, Then they pay the $46 recording fee for paying off their mortgage on the house they're selling. Then they pay the mortgage registry tax on the house they're buying. They pay the recording, the $46 recording fee for the mortgage registry. And then they pay the $46 recording fee to record the deed. The new surcharge in sections 12 and 13 would add to that list. We think it's time to stop increasing and adding fees on the purchase of a home and urge you to reject these new surcharges. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, sir, and thank you for your testimony today. And we're trying to figure out how to do this. They do good work, and we're just trying to figure it out. But I appreciate the testimony from all three of you. Mr. Krabenhoff, good morning. Welcome to our committee, and please go ahead when you're ready, sir. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Paul Krabenhoff. I'm president of the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts, and I'm a Clay SWCD supervisor in Moorhead. We appreciate the opportunity to speak to the Clean Water Fund appropriations policy in House File 639, and thank Representative Hansen for bringing it forward. As I know time's limited here, I'll be brief and ask that our staff follow up with any additional information in writing. Specifically to the bill language starting on line 16.9, we're still trying to understand what this would mean for SWCD's statewide conservation delivery system. For example, unlike the past 6 years of appropriation, there is no base appropriation to SWCDs in this language. If the bill language starting on line 16.9 for the first year and the subsequent provisions in the second year, starting on line 16.28, are meant to convey that we need to change our priorities or add to what we already have identified as priorities, then that makes our need for capacity funding even greater. Mr. Chair, I want to be clear that over the past several years, we have advocated for SWCD capacity funding to be a base ongoing general fund appropriation. But I also want to be clear that while it is not our preferred option, clean water funds are clean water funds are an appropriate funding source for the work of SWCDs. Throughout the state, SWCDs have used capacity funding only in ways that provide additionality and augment what other funding sources have afforded us to do, and only on projects, programs, and priorities that align our objectives to the Clean Water Fund. SWCDs identify, track, and report to the Board of Water and Soil Resources the use of their capacity funds in four main resource categories: reducing and mitigating soil erosion, managing riparian zones, storage and treatment of water on the landscape, and efforts to reduce excess nutrients. With regard to the deed tax provisions laid out in Section 12 and 13 of the bill, we look to our partners at the counties as to whether this is a workable option for them. Real estate transactions are an extremely volatile area of our economy, and not likely a reliable and sufficient source to our funding. At a minimum, a new local option for funding SWCDs should be not looked at as a way for the state to back away from its funding commitment. In closing, Mr. Chair, we do appreciate the opportunity to offer this input on the bill today, and SWCDs look forward to being part of the discussions going forward. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir, and thank you for your work with conservation districts. And we do know they're doing good work out there, so thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Dunleavy, you're up. I don't see you popping up here.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, here we go. Good morning.
I'm Kevin Dunleavy. I'm a real estate attorney. I've been one since 1985, and I co-chair the legislative committee of the real property section of the State Bar Association. I echo Amber Bougie's and John Nielsen's testimony. The only thing I'd add is the amendment in 2005 of section 357.18, a portion of the money, the increase in the fee, was dedicated to the operations of the county recorder's office. It didn't all go to the state fund. And so, you know, that fee does have a relationship to the services that are being provided to the real estate industry. Then the document rejects, I do title insurance litigation, and generally speaking, the first to record has priority, not all the time, but most of the time. About 50% of the files that I've worked on over the years are because of document rejects, because the fee wasn't right, or for whatever reason, the document gets recorded, and then a judgment, a tax lien, a bankruptcy, a mechanics lien, something else gets recorded. I've had dozens of cases where the home equity loan gets recorded because the prime mortgage got rejected. And I've also had fraud cases where the fraudster knew that the document hadn't been timely recorded, it was rejected, and so the fraudster was able to get a leg up on it, on the deal. This is over a 50% increase to the present $46 recording fee. So that's clearly going to add a lot of cost to real estate transactions. In addition, I don't know how you're supposed to figure this out. How do you know if a county has a soil or water conservation district? I don't know an easy way to figure that out. So that means someone's going to have to try to figure it out on each transaction. So for these reasons, the Minnesota State Bar Association Real Property Section opposes the surcharge provisions of this legislation.
Thank you, sir, and thank you for your testimony this morning. Mr. Martinson, good morning. Nice to see you again. Please go ahead when you're ready, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Brian Martinson. I'm the Environment and Natural Resources Policy Analyst with the Association of Minnesota Counties. My comments today focus on three provisions of the bill that are included not in the appropriation section, but in the policy items found in sections 12, 13, and 14. Section 12 creates a new fee, which seems to be a replacement for the state support of SWCD capacities starting in 2023. SWCD funding has been and remains an appropriate use of clean water funds. Since its inclusion in the Clean Water Fund budget, it has supplemented the work of SWCD's increased staff and focused outcomes. It has no doubt resulted in clean water benefits that rival most of the funding included in this budget. New fees raise questions, and particularly about comparable and reliable funding for districts as a substitute for state support. Local levies do support state or conservation district operations. State funding has leveraged an increase in the county funding. In the 4 years before state capacity funding, counties averaged $13.25 million annually to the conservation districts. That total has increased each year, and in 2018 accounted for $19.47 million in allocations to the counties, with a good portion of that being direct county annual allocations, not program dollars. I will also point out that there are unique funding mechanisms that exist that do not show up in the spreadsheet about county funding. Several counties that are listed as zeros or low dollars amounts on the spreadsheet have mutually agreeable solutions with the SWCDs, where SWCDs are county employees or occupy county space where the county does contribute and has a good relationship with the district. Section 13 would restrict county access to clean water funds. Counties do good work on behalf of the residents of the state and the people of the state with clean water fund dollars they receive. This work and access to the Clean Water Fund should not be used as leverage to force an LGU to impose fees. Finally, Section 14 sets a health risk limit in statute. There is a process for setting health risk limits using the Administrative Procedures Act. Through that process, the state is better situated to apply the current scientific understanding of effects of a chemical and adjust more readily as needed. Setting a standard in statute always becomes problematic at some point, and changes are difficult to address. Mr. Chair, thank you for the time.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your testimony, and nice to see you again. excuse me. Chair Hansen, we've heard a few testifiers about this fee, and I was just wondering if you could just kind of talk about it, and then we'll have a couple member questions and then get to there's an amendment. But, you know, this issue has been kind of ongoing, and I think it's clear that these folks are doing good work out there. You know, I mean, that's kind of where I start from. And, you know, we just kind of had ongoing problems getting it there. And there's been belief that it shouldn't be in this fund, although it has been the last few years, clearly. And but I think we need to, you know, come up with a solution in a way, you know, I mean, in that sense, I respect you greatly for the courage to kind of come up with a plan to try to figure out something, you know, a real long-term solution. You know, clearly this, these projects should be funded in my mind, and I'm certain I would support hoping that we can get there, whether it's through general fund or through these funds or through this hybrid with the fee or some way. But anyways, Chair Hansen, just a quick comment, and then I see I have some member questions here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I hope that members and Minnesotans listened closely to the testimony, because I think there were some themes. I actually heard the words base funding, that what has happened in the last three cycles is now base funding. And a commitment by the state. And I want to be really clear, clean water funds are not base funding. This was never intended to be base funding. And what this bill does is it directs that funding occurs with an outcome. That's the soil health components that are there for water quality protection, so that there's implementation and technical dollars there. But the other theme that was heard was, oh my God, $25 is going to be the end of the world as we know it. So I just refinanced my mortgage. And in the metro area, I paid a $5 fee. That's different than in greater Minnesota. So there currently is not uniformity in fees. The seven county metro area has a $5 fee that goes towards conservation. The precedent is there, and it's different than in other counties.
Thank you. Go ahead.
And I think it's important, how do you know if there's a soil and water district? One of the realtors had mentioned, or there's something, you can look it up online within moments. You can look up what the counties are. So I think a $25 fee, why the $25 fee? Because it's tied to land. Whether you are a homeowner, whether you are a farmer, whether you are a business owner, you're paying $25 for that land that you've purchased during the closing that helps pay for the conservation and water quality protection. And it's not too much to ask, I don't believe, for that to match the dollars, because relying on the Clean Water Fund for base funding, and remember what we're talking about here was $100,000 to every district, regardless of size, regardless of land mass, regardless of population. That is not an outcome-based distribution formula. That is a local government aid formula, and that's not what this money was supposed to be for.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Representative Bowe, and then Jordan, and then Anderson, and then we'll get to the amendment.
Thank you, Chair.
Good morning.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. Good morning. A quick statement and then a question. The statement is SWCDs need the clean water funding to continue the great work they do with private landowners. But I'm concerned about the way it's written here in House File 639. I fear that lines 16.9 to 17.7 would result in very little funding coming to Carver County SWCD, for example, which is who I represent, but other SWCDs as well, because of the geologic makeup of Carver County with little or no karst geographies, small drinking water supply management areas, and small amounts of nitrate contamination. So I guess the question is, how would the limiting factors like lines 16.12 to 16.6 affect the distribution of SWCD funding? And that would be maybe to the author or maybe Paul Krabanoff.
Thank you, Representative Bo. Representative Hansen or Mr. Krabanoff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Bo, Carver County is a beautiful county that has a diverse mix of geography, as you know. So there would be the application. You have some forests, you have some shallow sand aquifers, and you have some wind erosion that are there. So the soil health practices would be applicable to help cover that.
Representative Bo.
Okay. So let me thank you, Chair Lilly and Representative Hansen. I would follow that up maybe with Paul Krabanoff and his thoughts, because I heard him kind of mention the same section and having some concerns. I'm curious how he would read that.
Mr. Krabanoff, can you hear the question?
Yep. Yes, thank you for the question. In my opinion, well, I guess we'll get, the way I see it, we'll get the rules kind of handed down through Bowser. You know, as to how this actually fits. But my bigger point of it is we have, I guess I'd respond in this way. Each local district has their own set of priorities that engage in the four areas that I spoke to, which includes some of these. But it also starts adding some other things in that may not necessarily be applicable to certain areas. Maybe the same concern Representative Bo just mentioned. So I think, if I may, it's going to be the devil's in the details and whose priorities are we working toward? Is it to local? It's all for the state of Minnesota and waters, right? And land stewardship and soil erosion. We're all part of those practices already. We just have it, over the years, have it honed down locally to know where this is most efficient, how we have a relationship with our private partners and implement it, probably the most effective and efficient way of any stewardship body in the state. So,
thank you, Mr. Krabanoff. Representative Bo.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. I just want to make sure that we fine-tune this and get the money down to where the good can be done. So the local level knows what the needs are and what they can do. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bo. Vice Chair Jordan, good morning. I love your St. Patrick's Day effort there. And
thank you.
Very disappointed in myself.
Well, you can borrow my earrings whenever you want. thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Chair Hansen. I think we're really stuck on one point, but we're really missing a lot of the great human health impacts this has on our drinking water. That's something that matters to Minnesotans. We talk a lot about racial justice in this committee and how all the funds are doing. Can you talk a little bit about how this bill advances racial equity and impacts BIPOC communities in particular?
Thank you, Representative Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Jordan. I think this bill does a good job. It could do more, but I want to specifically note a couple of appropriations. One is the lead abatement provision, the $2.5 million there that I think can very help out BIPOC communities who may have infrastructure that can cause health impacts dramatically. The inflow infiltration, the second one there, also older communities, first-tier suburbs, within the metro area, often BIPOC communities that are hit with a very large cost.
but are also susceptible to the leaching that occurs there. I would also point out the tire chemical, you know, where are roads built? If we look, we've heard multiple times about, you know, roads being put through communities and who is exposed to tire wear and the water quality that's impacted there. I think that tends to be BIPOC communities. And the groundwater implementation area in Dakota County. Also, shallow sandy areas, often there may be tribal areas up north, areas that have shallow groundwater that are impacted by water quality more than others. So I hope that helps, Representative Jordan.
Representative Jordan, great question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Hansen, for that question. I think this is a really thoughtful bill, and it does. There's much more we can do. We all want to avoid situations where our most vulnerable communities are the ones that are bearing the brunt of pollution and contaminated water. So thank you for taking steps to ameliorate that problem. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members, and happy St. Patty's Day to all of us. I'm not going to ask Mr. Gartner to put up his slides again in the essence of saving time, but one of the slides he showed us showed where the clean water funding actually went out to, and a lot of agencies listed on that slide. And if I saw it correctly, Bowser was the biggest recipient of clean water funding. DNR also received clean water funding. We also talked about some of that money going for planning and training employees for the work that they do. And I'm just struck by is there any difference between using this money for planning for employees of DNR and Bowser and for admin for SWCDs? I think we're kind of playing with words here. And I see nothing wrong with using clean water funding for clean water projects that SWCDs do great jobs around the state. It's an appropriate use. Mr. Krabenhoff said that as well. So I think that clean water funding is appropriate for work going to SWCDs, much as it goes to other state agencies for planning and training for its employees. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. So there was no question there, or there was a?
No, just a comment. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you very much, and good comments. Representative Green, good morning. I don't know if you want to move your amendment or if you have some comments first. Go ahead.
If we're ready for amendments, I guess I could, but I just have one question before
yes,
that, and I'll address some other things when the amendment comes up.
Yep,
is Bowser available today?
Mr. Gardner, is Team Bowser on the on our Zoom?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Angie Becker Kadelka here.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Kadelka, Becker Kadelka. Could you tell me if how Bowser intends to even implement this? Because it seems like it's going to be very confusing, especially when we're withholding clean water funding from counties unless they will implement this fee.
Ms. Becker-Kadelka, did you hear the question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Green. So we have not been asked for a fiscal note yet on this, and so we have not looked through what the implementation process would be if there's and if there's other agencies like the Department of Revenue that would need to be involved. So the short answer is that we have not calculated how that would work.
Representative Green.
Well, thank you for the answer, but it's more than just the fiscal note and how you're going to implement the fiscal note. I guess the question is there, even though apparently you haven't looked at it, in your opinion, is this going to be pretty confusing to try to go through and decide who gets what funding? Because it looks to me like this is going to be very sporadic as far as funding and who gets what in these counties and what is appropriated to each SWCD.
Ms. Becker-Kadelka.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Green. So the So this was not part of the governor's recommendations. However, if the legislature does pass this, we will implement this as directed.
Thank you. I see Chair Hansen has his hand up. He might have additional comments or an answer. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Green, and I think Ms. Becker-Kadelka could validate that they have a reporting system at Bowser because they distribute money out. It's important to note in this bill, what we're talking about is what was referred to as base funding or capacity building, but the rest of that money to Bowser goes out to soil and water districts for implementation. So there's money that goes out plus the general cost share and the operations. So each of the districts have to report back to Bowser what they've spent. Having served on a soil and water conservation district, they meet monthly generally. And what could be done is just for those 40% of the state land mass that are covered by watershed districts, they vote that they're covered, you know, to notify Bowser that they're covered under a watershed district. There shouldn't be a fiscal cost on that. And for those counties that choose to implement a $25 fee, that also would be notified to Bowser during their financial reporting. Again, these are not major costs, and they are actions that can be taken by the local government to show that they're being done. Members, it's 2021. Think of the power of the technology that are in our hands right now, that we're able to conduct meetings. And if we see large fiscal notes on reporting whether or not a county has a watershed district or is imposing a $25 fee, I don't think it's reflecting the reality of the technology that has our fingertips right now, or the imposition of this $25 fee one time in terms of providing source for soil and water conservation.
Representative Green.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that answer, Representative Hansen. But here, let's just be clear, this is not really going to be a one-time fee. This fee is going to be added over and over again on every aspect of every transaction, the way that I understand it. But the question is as far as how this fits in, because right now we're crossing over a line where we're doing something in clean water funds that really doesn't have anything to do with clean water funds. You're going into the real estate business and you're collecting a tax that really has nothing to do with clean water. I mean, the fact that there's land involved is a huge, huge stretch at best. And so now we're going to have Bowser having to be looking into other aspects of taxing that have nothing to do with their primary goal. So there is a problem with this. And even we've had attorneys on telling us it's not workable. But Mr. Chair, I'll wait. I have some other comments, but we'll do those when we get to the amendments.
Thank you, Representative Green. Would you like to move the A3 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move the A3 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Green. We have your amendment before us. Go ahead and tell us about it.
Well, I'll start off with first of all, on clean water funds, I've never really been comfortable with a lot of testing. I think that we have enough information out there on many things to use these funds on the ground right away. But as we've noted here earlier, when we're talking about what we're doing with these funds and how we disperse them, we're talking about impairments. And so there's not really any clear detail as to what that impairment would be and when it becomes so little that it's not an impairment anymore, it's just an impairment. But my bill, the A3 amendment does, it really is going to give us a look into what nitrogen occurs naturally. I've looked at the MPCA water charts, and it always takes a few years to get new ones in. We know that. So they're probably a couple of years old. But it looks like almost every chemical, I will say, or nutrient, even nutrients, because nitrogen is a nutrient, is the levels are going down. And yet we're still looking at some impairments. But what my amendment would do was take three sections of property, one in northern Minnesota around the pine tree regions and what's called the Lost 40, that through a mistake in when they were out assessing the lands was left out, and so it's untouched. And then there's another one down in closer to southern Minnesota that's got hardwood trees on it, and then there's an area in the prairie regions in southern southwest Minnesota. And what I'd like to do is have the Department of Ag test these for what occurs naturally in nitrogen, because nitrogen does occur naturally. According to what I've read, thunderstorms and lightning actually contribute 10% of the nitrogen that we have, and if the things that I've been reading are true. So when we're making all these laws, and I've been asking for 8 years now for someone to tell me what is occurring naturally on these lands, if this amendment would pass or a bill would pass, over a very small study over 5 years, we could find out, you know, what is naturally occurring on these lands, and it would help us in determining if we're going in the right direction on some of these regulations.
Thank you, Representative Green. Not to nick it, but it sounds like a perfect, I served on LCCMR, and it sounds like a perfect study for LCCMR lottery funds. But Chair Hansen, any comments or either for or against at this time?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Green. I always like when people are looking for science to help solve problems. But unfortunately, in this area, there's a lot of science. There's a lot of research that's there. And, you know, we can do a basic literature search on naturally occurring background nitrogen. That information is there. I think I would oppose the amendment, Mr. Chair. I think that it would be redundant in terms of research that already is being conducted, and I don't believe the agencies would, particularly the Department of Agriculture, would either have the willingness or the capacity to be doing that. I should note for the record that nitrate, the township area testing, nitrate samples are going up, and it's not naturally occurring.
Thank you. Any other member questions or comments? I was always surprised in firewood, isn't there some toxins in firewood and that occur naturally? And anyways, so I don't see any final comments before we get to a vote. Representative Green, I don't see any hands or jumping up and down.
Well, maybe that's because everybody supports it. We'll see. No, it's, you know, I know the research is out there and I've read it, but we never see that when we come to our committees. We never see it on the reports. And if you look at the testing from the MPCA, the nutrients, and like I said, it's all when they talk about nitrogen or phosphorus. If you get too much, it can be a problem. There's no question about that. But right now, we start implementing regulations when the nitrogen, for example, could be as low as 3 parts per million, and so then guards start going up, and so I think this is just a good way for us to look at land that hasn't been touched, and see what's there.
Thank you, Representative Green. Seeing no further questions. I'd like to go to a vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed?
Aye.
No.
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 Okay. It's turning into the House floor there. I don't believe it passed, Representative Green. So on to the final a bill. Any questions or comments? Representative Bow, I see your hand. Oh, okay. No. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to touch on a few things. We do get hung up on the SWCD portion of this. I truly believe that the committee is overstepping its bounds by putting this this mandate on counties to collect an additional tax, and so I don't like that. But there's other things in the bill as well I have questions on. And I tried to write it down because, once again, I have trouble scrolling through my computer to find things. But for Bowser, also, on line 12.28, it's got $2.7 million. And I apologize if I get this wrong as far as the number goes. But there's money in there for the One Watershed, One Plan, and it's a significant amount of money. And I'm wondering if the One Watershed, One Plan across the state is far enough along where they're going to be able to use these funds because a lot of the counties haven't even voted on these yet.
Representative Hansen or one of your one of the agencies?
Mr. Chair, that's the Clean Water Council recommendation.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Chair, I might defer to Ms. Becker-Kadelka at Bowser on One Watershed, One Plan.
Ms. Becker-Kadelka, please.
Mr. Chair and members, yeah, so it's a good question. The One Watershed, One Plan is all voluntary. And so what we have found is that the local governments that are involved, they need to decide collectively if they want to submit an application for this process. And so far we've had applications submitted and plans started in over 50% of the state. And we anticipate that we are on track to keep that going. And so that recommendation right there is based on the current interest that we've had from across the state, as well as being able to really evolve this from the old model that we've all known for the last 30 years around county water planning, to really how do we look at this more holistically on a watershed basis, and how do we plan around where the water flows and not just those political boundaries.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Ms. Becker-Kadelka. The other question then, should counties decide not to join the One Watershed, One Plan, will there be any funding that's withheld from them?
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Green. So there is no, right now, in the way that the Clean Water Fund appropriations work, it's all voluntary in how One Watershed, One Plan moves forward. So a county and the watershed district, if it's there, or the soil and water district, they jointly make that decision about whether or not they want to enter into One Watershed, One Plan. Those resources that are part of the implementation funding, they would need to complete a One Watershed, One Plan to be eligible for those resources, the implementation funding. However, any entity that's eligible, a local government entity that's eligible, can apply for the competitive-based funding.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Green. Yep.
So I guess the answer is yes, but we'll move on. I'll just have one more question because I know we've got another bill coming up and the time is short. On the Department of Health, it talks on, I think it's page 18.4 when I wrote it down after I went through the bill, and maybe in 17.3.1, there's language in there that says that if it's anticipated that I don't know, for lack of a better word, because I don't have it on the bill, anything would be found in the waters if it's not only if it's there, but if it's anticipated. How do they gauge whether or not they're going to anticipate finding pollution in the water? It's either there or it's not.
Right. Thank you, Representative Green. Who can answer the question?
Mr. Chair, this is Tani Eschnauer from the Minnesota Department of Health. Thank you. With your permission.
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair and Representative Green. The Department of Health looks at chemicals that are used in the state of Minnesota because we want our work to be very Minnesota-focused and Minnesota-relevant. We look at things that are happening nationally, and then we look to see whether or not they could possibly be found in Minnesota. We want to be able to anticipate that these chemicals will be found and be able to provide health guidance. An example of this from which we learned was for the perfluorochemicals that were found in the East Metro, where because they hadn't been detected originally, we did not have any health-based guidance. And so we were in the situation of having to provide advice without having a lot of work done in advance of it. And so what the Clean Water Funds allow us to do is to be able to anticipate and develop these health-based guidance values so that when the chemicals are found, we have advice so that citizens can protect their families from these contaminants.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm gonna end because I'm sorry that we're running this late, but I will say that I don't remember, and I've been in this committee since I've been in the legislature, I don't remember this much opposition to any one bill by so many different people. I think that there's a lot of problems with this bill we haven't even touched on yet. And so I would recommend a no vote on the bill today. I'm laying it over.
Thank you, Representative Green. Representative, or Chair Hansen, any final comments on the bill, and then we'll get to a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, this is a good bill. And there is opposition because change is hard. Change is hard. And it's a lot easier to just keep doing the same old stuff. That's not what the people of Minnesota voted for when they took the risk to increase their taxes to protect water. It wasn't just keep doing what we're doing. Let's not double down on the status quo. It was let's take a risk to make things better. So I'm asking you to make things better. Vote for this bill and let's move forward and clean up our water like the people intended us to do.
So thank you, Chair Hansen, and thank you, members, and the public testimony as well. We've had a great discussion this morning, and I think it'll continue. It's a great opportunity to continue doing great work for Minnesota. So with that, I renew my motion that House File 639, as amended, wait, not amended. be laid over. So thank you. My apologies to the folks, Representative Christensen, you're on our committee. We have public TV here. We're gonna give them a few minutes to get going, and then we might have to come back on Friday. We have a longer meeting on Friday from 1 to 5 p.m., but it is quite a full agenda. But Representative Christensen, you're on the committee. Would you like to move that your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we've got 9 minutes. We can see what we can do.
Take your time, go ahead.
Okay, so House File 1905 provides Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund grants for the 6 stations of Minnesota Public Television. These stations have a great track record of providing arts and cultural heritage programs all over Minnesota. There are 6 stations, each operated by local nonprofit boards, focused on serving their local communities with stories of arts, history, and cultural heritage. From Bemidji to Austin, from Granite Falls to Duluth, and from the Red River Valley to the Twin Cities, these stations support lifelong learning and tell stories that are for and about Minnesotans. In the past year alone, Minnesota Public Television had nearly 10 million online views of legacy content. Yes, that's almost 10 million online views of legacy-funded online content and videos. Through a legacy initiative called Moving Lives Minnesota, the stations are telling stories about history of immigration and origin, stories of the communities who have moved through and to Minnesota. The stations work hard to tell stories of our diverse communities across the state. These stations also produced more than 1,000 lesson guides that are available for schools. In the coming biennium, the MPTA stations would like to build on their education work by increasing outreach to students, families, and communities across the state. To tell you more about the request, we have from Minnesota Public Television Association, Bill Strastinsky and Les Keen.
Thank you. Representative Christensen, thank you for your work on this. So Representative Christensen moves that House File 1905 be laid over. So we do have that bill before us. Mr. Strastinsky, thank you very much for coming. Try to keep it short. I'm reading your book right now. You're famous. You're a hero. And I just watched, we've heard a lot of testimony on the Jim Crow of the North, and I really strongly recommend that all members take a look at it. It was just an amazing piece, and again, just that alone, you have over a million views, and that was funded by Legacy. Please take a look at it, all members of the public. Mr. Straczynski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, and thank you for the shout-out about my story, Care Under Fire, from the time when I was a combat medic in Vietnam.
You look the same.
Years ago. I haven't changed a bit, but thank you so much. I appreciate being here today, and Lessine will talk a little bit further about some of these things. And I so appreciate the support we've received from this community committee over all of these years. As you know, we do serve our six stations serve every resident in Minnesota, and we've done a lot of good, and particularly in the homeschool environment and the pandemic where people are staying at home, a lot of teachers are using our legacy programs in the classroom and certainly homeschoolers. But before I get further into this, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have a legacy. I'd like to have a reel shown, a little video that Lessine will launch. It was done a year ago to give a report to your committee. So you'll see people not wearing masks and that sort of thing. But this gives you a flavor for exactly what we're all about, what we're doing, and what we want to continue to do in the future. So, Mr. Heen, roll the video.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Heen, go ahead.
Okay. Since 2009, legacy funding has fueled the six PBS stations of the Minnesota Public Television Association to share powerful stories about the people, culture, arts, and heritage of Minnesota. Over the past 2 years, our stations broadcast more than 13,000 hours of legacy-funded work to over 5 million people in our region, creating a ripple effect of impact that goes far beyond the broadcast. Centering community voices in our storytelling has sparked deep collaboration, engagement, learning, and action. Pioneer PBS in Granite Falls and Appleton has created a platform for little-known stories to be told in rural Minnesota, helping to bring important social issues to the forefront of community discussion, like the story about veteran Bob Borman that lifted a veil of secrecy about long-term effects of nuclear testing. More than 1,000 hours of legacy-funded programming is accessible to millions on air, online, in classrooms, and in our communities. The MPTA highlights the ongoing resonance and relevance of history. It's essential to understanding who and where we are today. Jim Crow of the North, a history documentary from Twin Cities PBS, delves into the complex history of racial covenants in Minneapolis, which has lasting repercussions on housing inequities today. Community members gather together to watch and to take action.
I'm hard to describe it as doing something unlike anything seen across the country, which I think is amazing. So they're mapping the history of housing discrimination.
Artists featured in MPTA content report they are selling more work. Viewers are attending more arts events and are contributing more to their local economies because of our programs. In Austin and Rochester, KSMQ programs like Off 90 and Our Town strive to reflect the community and the stories they tell, highlighting cultural traditions, natural resources, and what brings us together.
Happy New!
Prairie Mosaic celebrates people who enhance the quality of life in Moorhead and Crookston.
That's my story. And it's the story of Indian Americans that have come to this country and called America their home.
Legacy funding also empowers Prairie Public to support teachers and students in culturally responsive learning, and MPTA stations offer more than 1,000 free online guides that empower educators to bring Minnesota stories into the classroom.
I've always hoped that the Secret War would be taught in more classrooms. This is a way for us to provide the resources in order to encourage teachers to be inclusive of this history in the curriculum.
The PBS Learning Media site expands this impact even further and is actually...
We're gonna have to have you stop for... Mr. Heen, we're at a time crunch here, and my apologies. I'm hoping that you can come back on Friday briefly to to tell us your story. It's a great story. And again, I hope members have an opportunity to look at Jim Crow of the North and some of the other programming that you're doing. And my apologies, Representative Christensen, we'll have to present more. Thank you for your work on this and your leadership. Mr. Straczynski, is that okay? We can have you back Friday. Sorry.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We appreciate it. We'd like to talk further about our request. So thank you. Friday works fine.
Okay. Thank you, members, for the discussion this morning. This bill here is laid over, but for now. Thank you for discussion on this and on the, clearly on the water issue. It's so important. And it's amazing the good work we're able to do with these funds all over Minnesota. But again, thank you to all the members, and happy St. Patrick's Day. And Mary, you look great too with your green. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.